the Bofala podcast. Hi everyone, it's Monique Gordion, and the great news is you found the podcast, a space for stories that will arouse a smile and inspire us as we tap into our collective experiences. Enjoy. Welcome everybody to the Bofala podcast. As always, it's great to have you back. Well, I have the pleasure of Steve Hunter with me today. So, how you doing, Steve?
Hey, pretty decent. Yeah, nice. Good.
You're in Vancouver now, is that right?
No, I'm in Kelowna, not too far from Vancouver.
Oh, right. Okay, in Canada. So, Steve and I don't know each other. This is our first time chatting. I saw a post of Steve's on a Camino pilgrim site that I follow, and I was pretty impressed because you can talk about this, but or if you want to, because I'm not quite sure what your story is going to be, but you walked 3,000 kilometers around Europe, which is generally Caminos. I mean, the French way is like nearly 800 kilometers. I did have someone here on who was like 70 and she did 2000. I was pretty impressed with that. She was amazing. So, amazing. So you did 3000, is that right?
Well, I mean, first off, not all at once.
No.
And that's actually only about the content in my book, Relish in the Tread.
Okay.
So I wrote that book based on the Camino Frances in 2013, which I did from Saint Jean Pied de Paul all the way to Murcia.
Go on. Sorry, I love that bit from Finisterre to Murcia. It's really
nice. Actually, that whole area from Santiago to Murcia is really really nice because you know the traffic's a lot less and.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more hilly. It's a little bit more dynamic. And then you have the ocean appearing and it's like a little bit dramatic.
For our listeners, by less traffic, Steve means less people on the path, right?
A lot less.
Yeah, a lot less.
And the book again, it's a lot about the way.
Mm.
Not necessarily the Camino Frances, not necessarily the Norte, not necessarily anything like that. It's just more about like the philosophy of the way, like your way, my way, our way, their way. You know, there's like a way and it kind of, you know, inadvertently guides us along and shows us more or less a path that we could follow or another one or not. Like there is no real like, there is no real way, but I don't know, like on the Camino, it really becomes a part of you because you're following these yellow arrows, right? Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while, there's another arrow that says, hey, go down this way 2 kilometers. And every time I did that, it was a really great experience. And I think if you really grab onto that philosophy, it's kind of suggesting like there is no way, right?
Yeah.
So
grab
your certificate if you want it, but I don't know, like for me my goal wasn't to walk to Compostela. My goal was to walk. That's it.
Beautiful. I love that, and I think that that is the best goal of all, is just to walk.
It needed to happen. I was really stagnated in travel in general. I'd been traveling for maybe 5 years. I'd been to a lot of countries. I'd done a lot of, you know, I'd immersed myself in places. I worked in Australia for a while.
Whereabouts?
I lived in, first off, in Noosa and then in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And then I joined the carnival and I was a carny. I was a showy.
Oh, really? Oh
my God. I got kids to play games for teddies.
That's great. You joined the circus.
Well, pretty much. And I hitchhiked all over the country and I had a really, really great time. And it really taught me a lot about like sustainability, self-sustainability of like carrying my tent and all of my gear to cook and all of that stuff and really minimalize my budget. So when I went to Southeast Asia from there, it was really hard to be surrounded by that same like East Coast tourism. It was really tough. I wanted to have nothing to do with that. And it took me a really long time to figure out how to escape from that. And then when I arrived in Europe, I kind of like ended up in that same predicament, like just surrounded by tourism and following the same routine and like going to cathedrals and stuff. And it's just like, this really isn't what I'm looking for. And yeah. I'd met this woman in India a couple of years before, and she mentioned the Camino de Santiago, and I'd read Paulo Coelho and some other stuff, and I'd heard it a little bit as a like back like as a reference, but I didn't really know much about it. And she'd call me a pilgrim, so I thought that was kind of fascinating. So then I went. I decided to go. A bunch of stuff happened, negative. So I went to this Saint Jean Pied de Paul. I was surrounded by people and I was like, why did she send me to this?
Yeah.
like it's exactly what I'm trying to get away from. But at the same time, it actually turned out to be absolutely brilliant because of all the family that you build and all the people that you meet and all the like the brutal honesty that people give you about yourself, about themselves, about everything around you, you know. And then there's the wine on the riversides and all that stuff. But I knew that like that was like it was a nice idea, but I felt like there was something more to this. So I lived on the beach in Finisterre at Mar de Fora for I think 2.5 months.
Okay.
I picked grapes in France in Bordeaux. And then I went over to Rome to visit some pilgrim friends. And I met a guy who said he was walking from Rome to Istanbul. And I thought, what?
Yeah, wow. Rome to Istanbul. Like, how many kilometers is that?
2,000.
So
it depends on your route, depends on how you go. The route that I took was 2,000.
What was the what countries did you go through for that?
I walked through most of the middle and south middle of Italy, and then I took a ferry to Croatia, and then directly into Bosnia, and then directly into Montenegro. And then I followed the coast all the way down to Durres in Albania. And then almost like a straight line across through Macedonia, Greece, and then Turkey. It was absolutely the most brilliant thing I've ever done. And I've done some pretty brilliant things since then.
Yeah. So just before we leave that amazing walk, did you walk with that person the whole 2,000 kilometers?
No. We separated 5 minutes later.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Yeah. I went to work in Slovakia. I taught English. I got my first teaching job. And then the next summer I went there and I decided to do that walk. He didn't even walk it in the end.
Oh funny. Wow. So you went back to Rome and then started the walk.
A
little bit later.
4.5 months it took me.
Oh my God, I'm so envious. I mean, I think that's amazing. You must have gone through a lot of cities though, right?
No, not really. Not big cities. Obviously going into Istanbul was really, really tiring, exhausting, ugly. But it was also intense. It was like, when are you going to walk all the way through like one of the biggest cities in the world? You know, like there was like 20 lanes of traffic.
Oh. Okay, so how did you know? You must have used Google Maps or something. Like, how did you know your route? What did you use? A compass?
No, nothing.
Nothing. So nothing, how did you? I don't get it. How did you know where to go?
I just asked people, and it was really frustrating, really difficult, and it drove me crazy.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine carrying a bunch of maps. And I was like, you know what? People are going to help me because this is the way, right? I'm going on my way. I'm going to find the way and so on. And so I just put the way into their hands. And majority of people let me down.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So you did it. How did you find that emotionally? Or psychologically?
It was really trying and really frustrating at times. And especially the first day out of Rome, like I could have done a lot better planning. I didn't have a smartphone back then. I didn't even get one for a couple more years. They were just coming out anyways. It's only been a few years since they'd come out. And the idea of like carrying around a big stack of
maps
was just like, I'm not going to do that. I had a very loosely printed kind of like Camino map of it's called the Via Francigena del Sur. So it's like the southern Via Francigena. So Via Francigena goes from England, big cathedral, starts with a C, Canterbury. Goes from Canterbury all the way to Rome. And then the south goes from Rome to Bari.
In Greece.
Mm-hmm. The east coast of Italy.
Oh yes, you leave Bari to get to Greece. Yep.
Yeah, you could do, but I went to Croatia. Because it extended my time and it made it more difficult, and I got to experience the Balkans. I had this loosely showing map of like destination points, right? But the Via Francigena del Norte has really good, clear directional, like on the Camino, you have the yellow arrows everywhere. Oh, you have these map guides all over the place, these little flags. The Via Francigena del Sur has very, very, very minimal of them.
Yeah. And where is that section, the one you just mentioned?
From Rome to Bari on the east coast.
I see. So from Canterbury to Rome, it's reasonably well marked, but from Rome to Bari, not so much.
Yeah, and then there's another one called the Via Ignatia, which goes from Durres, which is in Albania, all the way across, as I explained, through Macedonia and Greece, until Istanbul. And then there's more trail that goes along the way in Turkey and then through Syria and then to Israel.
That's amazing.
So you can essentially walk all the way from Tarifa in the south of Spain all the way around to Jerusalem if you really wanted to. Anyway, so the Rome to Istanbul Via Ignatia also has these little flag markings, but again, they're very, very, very few. They were very, very hard to find. It was excruciating trying to figure it out. I killed so much, you know, like mental energy. It was just exhausting, and it was really unnecessary. And had I had a smartphone, it would have been completely different. But at the same time, you know, when you get lost, you get found, right?
Yeah, so tell me a bit about that. So it was very challenging, but obviously you kept doing it. So there must have been a reason why you kept going, or are you just a tenacious person, very goal-orientated?
I guess goal-oriented, but I told myself I was going to follow through with this.
Mm.
And it was a really big objective for me. Like, I don't know, I didn't really find the Camino de Santiago a very challenging pursuit. I wasn't really looking for a challenging pursuit, but I've always kind of tried to challenge myself. So I felt like, okay, you know what? I said I'm going to do this, so this is what I'm going to do. And it doesn't matter what happens. I got really bad water poisoning. I was vomiting all over the place. I got beat up with sticks from a bunch of farm kids. I twisted my ankle. Actually, I cracked a bone in my foot in Greece. I fell into a ditch. So I spent 2 weeks in a bed in Thessaloniki waiting for that to recover. And then the last week and a half, it rained the whole time through Turkey, like majority of the time. And I had fake Crocs. I didn't actually wear like decent shoes or anything because, you know, you're not really like hiking mountains. So like wearing hiking boots is just, you know, 45 degrees. It's really hot. It's really So on the Camino, I threw away my shoes and I wore Crocs. So
I've heard of people doing that actually.
And it was fine. You know, they like, I got holes in the soles on the last day in Finisterre, right at the office there, and right across the street, there was a Chinese market selling Crocs. So like problem solved, right?
Yeah. So that gave you the support you needed. Your feet didn't slip out. Like, did you have the back strap on to keep you in place? Or I mean, how did
I went
work?
Through five pairs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was barefoot sometimes. It was not a good plan. It was a really bad plan, actually.
It sounds like you made some mistakes along the way.
I did a lot. And that's the thing, like when you watch video, well, not maybe not so much videos, but when you look on social media, like Instagram and stuff, they always demonstrate the most beautiful, you know, eclectic, perfect, you know, like, look at me, look at my best life, right?
Sure.
They show you an image, a really beautiful image, and you don't even know it, but like 3.5 feet to the left or right, there's like a big pile of rubbish.
That's right.
You know, like the camera has a fantastic way of showing what you want people to see, right? So I think writing this book was really important for that as well, because I got a chance to just say it how it is. Like, it's tough, it's really hard, and let's not, you know, dance around it. Like, I think if you go out and you want to travel, long-term travel, so that's pilgrimage, I think, modern day pilgrimage, long-term traveling. I've been to 88 countries. I walked the Likia way in South Turkey. I walked across Taiwan and I walked across Portugal after that. I've hitchhiked 120,000 kilometers. I've done a lot of like pilgrimage style stuff after that Camino, because it really drove me. It was like a different way of traveling. It was like, you know what? I get so much more out of this when I go really slowly and I actually try to immerse myself with people around me, and the people are a lot more receiving, you know, they're like, why is this crazy man walking through my town? You know, like, best hospitality, other than the few idiots that decide to hit you with some sticks or something, but that's always going to happen, like even in your hometown.
I find people fantastic, you know. Wherever I go, people, you know, I guess the people you meet reflect how you're feeling, you know. If you're angry and defensive and cynical, then that's what you'll see, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. It's hard not to be sometimes, though, right?
Well, I think
nobody's perfect.
I mean, that's the thing, right? We have all of these experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, that's what travel, well, life is really, but travel definitely highlights all of the complexities of human nature, I think.
Yeah, it does on a daily basis. I just like, I don't, another thing, like, okay, the Instagram, beautiful pictures, beautiful views, best life. There's another one where it's like, oh, you know, if you're a positive you, then you will get a positive back. And sometimes it's just not, you know, you don't have to be positive all the time. It's okay to lose your cool. Like, sometimes you need to, you know, like in India, it's a crazy stressful country. Bangladesh as well.
Oh, I haven't been
Bangladesh was even worse, because, you know, majority of people have never seen a white person. So they're like, oh my God. And with smartphones now, like everybody wants to take a picture with you, something like in China, and like, you're just bombarded, like you're, I don't know, Brad Pitt or George Clooney or whatever. And, you know, it's really invasive. So from time to time, you know, I try and be nice for a while, like, please, you know, I learned the words in the local dialect and, hey, come on, man, give me some space. But when it doesn't happen, then, you know, sometimes you lose your cool and it's okay. Like, walk away from the situation and move on.
So do you think that was your takeaway from this extensive nomadic pilgrim life, is just to, well, what do you think is your takeaway? I'm not going to guess.
I would like you to fill in the blanks.
Well, it just sounds like to me, from what you're saying, it just sounds to me like you've learned to roll with the punches and not have crazy expectations. Like a lot of people, when they travel, they think it's all just going to be a bed of roses. People are going to be wonderful. It's going to be great. But really, traveling is just like life at home, in that we are who we are when we travel. We don't turn into saints. We don't turn into, especially on the pilgrimages, you know, on the Caminos. It's not a perfect situation. People do get rattled. And, you know, there's no point. It's kind of acceptance. Do you think acceptance of what's happening around you? Would you say that's what you found? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I had a conversation with a woman not that long ago. So I just got back to Canada. I hitchhiked from Cancun to my hometown.
You hitchhiked from Cancun in Mexico to your hometown near Vancouver?
No, in Southern Ontario.
Oh, Southern Ontario. Okay.
Yeah, I grew up near Toronto.
Oh, Toronto. Okay, I've got friends in Cambridge, actually.
Yeah, I'm even closer to Cambridge than Toronto.
Oh.
So I got back. I went to Ottawa to visit a couple of friends. And I was sitting in a bar waiting for a friend to get off work. And these three people were there. And this girl... they were talking about, I don't know, something about Korea. And I started laughing. It was like words that he had learned in Korean, which were like words that I had learned in, you know, 15 different countries. And we started talking and this girl was like, oh my God, you've been to all these places. That's so fascinating. Like, you must be so spiritual. And I was like, no, not really.
Okay, so this is interesting because...
I'm quite the opposite, actually.
Yeah, because the zeitgeist at the moment is to... and I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm just saying, responding to that comment, is the zeitgeist is that everything is a spiritual experience. Everything's a lesson to become a better person, blah, 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 right?
Yes.
Would you agree with that? Like,
people frame stuff?
Maybe not.
Yeah, just like the whole like spirituality.
Some things don't have meaning unless it's got a spiritual component to it, is what I'm not saying that's right or wrong. Just so for you, if I'm hearing you correctly, that's not your jam. Is that right?
No, not really. Like I'm kind of borderline like progressive nihilist.
Oh, okay. What does that mean for you?
Just that, like, you know, it's right now and everything in front of me and whatever happens and it's kind of irrelevant anyways, and just keep moving forward and I guess just do you face the consequences, you know, like have accountability. You know, I taught a bit of English in Egypt and people be like, oh, I didn't do my homework, inshallah. And I'm like, no, man, that's not God's will. That's you not doing your homework.
Like, okay, that's interesting. So basically owning your shit, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I got drunk last night. I got a really bad hangover. It's not the alcohol's fault.
So owning up to life, really. Okay.
Yeah, and I find like I don't know, there's like a certain element to spirituality where people kind of like throw away the or like back out of accountability and say, oh well, you know, you know, oh, it's got nothing to do with me.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. That's it's kind of refreshing to hear you talk like this, because I love people's listening to people's view of the world or their psychology or philosophy of life. It's great, you know.
Yeah, well, that's nice to hear, because the woman I was talking to, she was not happy. She got really upset.
Yeah, well, you know.
She was like, how dare you go out into the world and have all these experiences and come back a cynic? And I'm like, you're being totally judgmental right now.
Well, it didn't fit in with her way of what a successful life is, right?
And she's talking about spirituality, and yet it doesn't fit into her way, right? Like,
yeah.
That's what I mean. That's where I got lost. When I went to India the first time, you know, I was looking for answers or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I went to Manali and around that Rishikesh area. And I didn't go to Dharamsala, but in that area, you know, it's full of young people going to find the meaning of life or whatever. And I was just completely stunned by it. I was like, so... Like, honestly, had John Lennon and Paul McCartney not gone there, would it have become, you know, like
well, yeah. So it's set up a trend, right? That's really interesting. I love it. So would you say, are you wanting to continue? Like, are you a full-time nomad or pilgrim, as I think you call it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I was on the road for 14 years.
14 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Can I ask you a practical question before you go on? How did you fund yourself for that, if you don't mind me asking? Like, odd jobs along the way and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I was I'm a chef by trade.
Ah.
So I trained to cook, and I worked in Noosa as a chef de partie. And I worked in Sydney as a pants cook. And then I found the carnival after I had to do some volunteer work on a farm. The carnival, I made pretty good money on the carnival. I was able to save and have a lot of free time and move around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. When I left that life, I ended up in Egypt at one point, and I did a teacher's course, TEFL.
Oh, yes. So that's teaching English as a foreign language.
Yeah. And I was a little bit behind the eight ball, because for years now, if you only have a TEFL certificate, it doesn't really, like, I found jobs, but had I had a bachelor's degree as well, I would have gotten visas. So yeah. I ended up working illegally a lot. And that's, you know, it's very frustrating, very tough. You're always like looking over your shoulder. Oh, am I going to get caught?
Yeah.
You know, and the employers also use it against you in a way, like maybe not consciously, but like, you just don't have that, like, you really don't have that security. And I guess, you know, living that lifestyle, that's what I wanted. That's what everybody should want, is to like break out of that security. But after a while, it really wears on you. So I did a bit of bartending and serving, and I picked fruit in a few countries. And I went over to New Zealand on a working holiday. My last one, when I was just before I turned 37, and I bartended over there, and then, taught English in Kazakhstan.
Oh.
During COVID, that's where I got stuck for COVID. I spent all
of
that year of COVID, I spent in Kazakhstan and Almaty.
Oh, man. What's that? Can I ask you what that's like? I've never been to any of the stans.
It's pretty wild. It's not like West Africa, but in a way that it's like really like confrontational in a way.
Okay. Is that the elements or the culture? Like, what's confrontational?
It's just like in Africa, a lot of people were like white, money, 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 money.
Yeah.
And it was really hard to, it wasn't that hard to build relationships, but it was hard to live day by day without having to deal with that on a regular basis. So the first 3 months were really, really tough. The next 3 months, you kind of get used to it. You're like, okay. And then it also got easier. It got like I wouldn't notice it as much, or like actually in certain countries, maybe it happened less. I'm not really sure.
Maybe also, because you don't look like the rich tourist.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like, neither did my friend who was cycling across Africa, and everybody kept telling him to give him his bike.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, it just didn't matter. It was like, oh, you're white, so you give us stuff. Like, that is
that's a problem.
That's the full assumption, because of NGOs, because of all the support networks. It's just like a first instinct. Oh,
yeah.
And, you know, the language barriers. I speak French, so I could get along. Guinea-Bissau was kind of tough because of the Portuguese. But still, like, there's a lot of people that speak, you know, local languages, and they don't speak perfect French, and I don't speak perfect French, and I speak more like Canadian French, and they speak more like African French. So there were barriers there. And, you know, I was just like confronted with lots of like just raw difficulties, like, you know, having to get through that, and like really hot weather and sweating, and you know, like, I got a skin rash, and then there's malaria, and, you know, like, I got dysentery a couple times. There were just like a lot of events that were like really like hard and very honest, because seriously, it's not easy to live in West Africa. So why should it be easy for me to live in West Africa?
So what country were you in West Africa?
Most of them, majority. Oh. I spent 6 months.
I thought you said you're in Kazakhstan, and that's like not Africa, right?
Sorry, I was comparing the two. So getting back to the stands, it's really, really tough.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, you don't speak Russian? And I'm like, no. How can you not speak Russian? You don't have kids? No, you don't have kids. And that's really confrontational. You know, like, yes, I'm 40 years old and I don't have kids. How is that possible? What's wrong with you? And you're like, nothing.
Gosh, that's really interesting that they were
over and over and over and over again, because religion,
they were kind of putting their culture onto you, or their expectations of what a successful life is. And you didn't fit that paradigm, right?
Yeah, but it's just the way that they're brought up, right? Like, that's just the whole society. That's how it rolls. So it's not even like an intentional like shot in the arm. It's just being completely honest. And and for me, it's confrontational. For them, they don't really care.
I guess that's interesting. So you now in Canada. Are you going to continue on traveling?
Right now I'm driving across Canada, just, you know, advertising my book.
Oh, yes. Tell us about your book. Your book. The book with all the challenges of travel, right?
I just put the website up. So it's relishinthetread.com.
Okay.
I just started it about an hour ago before we started chatting. I've been waiting for my book trailer video so I could get it going live. You know, the Amazon and all that stuff. And so obviously I'm not a marketing genius because I studied cooking.
So you self-published, did you?
Yeah. I put out the feelers and I was ignored, and I thought, you know what, forget this. I'm going on my own. I've been going on my own for most of my life, so why would it be any different this way? And it was kind of told to me, like, do the first one on your own and then go to them and show them how you're committed to writing. Because writing, I am committed to. It's not just a book of travels.
Uh-huh. So you're already thinking about your next book?
I've already written three more.
Oh my goodness. Are they all travel related?
Yeah, I mean, that was my life for 15 years. Yeah. So, but it's, you know, the broader topic for Relish in the Tread is 3,000 kilometers of walking across Europe. But as I said, the philosophy is more about the way. And there's also, like, when you're in certain parts as a reader, you get to read about the history of those parts, like in former Yugoslavia or Hoxha, the dictator of Albania. There's, you know, there's like tidbits of information, because when I read books, I really like to learn stuff.
Mm.
Like I like to take stuff away from what I read, right? So I try and do the same thing. So it's not historical fiction, but there's still, it's kind of like when you go traveling, what do you learn about architecture, you know, the culture of the environment you're in. So in this case, it's European culture, historical stuff like World War II stuff, colonial stuff, whatever it might be, food culture. So all of that stuff is things that you sort of go through if you're not an Instagram traveler going to find hotspots.
So when did you start writing this book? I'll just move on from there. what was I asking you? When did you write this book? After you'd come back to Canada, or have you been writing the road?
No, I started writing it after I arrived in Istanbul. Actually, mm-hmm. I wrote 5 short stories while I was walking to Istanbul. And then I thought I was just going to leave it with those 5 short stories, but I'd written a book before that.
Oh, okay.
It was a really sophomore effort at, you know, a novel. I wrote poetry for a long time, little short stories. I used to think that I was going to be a rapper 20 odd years ago. So writing has always been a part of me. It's just that when I started writing this book, I actually started to like read a lot and traveling really, really hard. So I had a lot of time on my hands and a lot of inspiration and a lot of like emotional roller coasters. So I think that really comes through in the writing.
Yeah. And, you know, I've got to say, it's the challenges or the dangers are often the better stories at dinner parties than, oh, well, I sat drinking a coffee in Rome. You know what I mean? It's great pizza. I mean, it's the crazy stories that it can sound like everything's dangerous or chaotic, but actually it's a balance, right? But they are better stories often. It's true.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, I'm really into the philosophy of Hemingway, you know, just be honest.
Yeah. Okay. So don't shoot yourself now, Steve. Don't be too inspired.
I'm also a really big fan of Jack Kerouac. I'm almost at 46. So
you're almost at 46, did you say?
Well, he died at 46 of liver dysfunction.
Oh, you know, I started listening to his audio, his book, you know, that famous book.
On the Road.
On the Road, yeah. So, okay, so going forward, your destiny now is writing books. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, so I'm traveling across Canada right now. We've been on the road for about a week. I'm going to get out to Tofino and then go all the way back home. And hopefully the 50 odd books that I brought with me will not come back with me.
So you've got some reading ahead of you by the sounds of things. Oh, the books you're selling, your books.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're doing, going to bookshops and doing signings and all that sort of stuff?
No, because that would require a literary agent.
Yeah. Okay.
And a publisher that would like promote me and tell them about me, but I don't have any of that. So I'm just going around and doing my thing, being a punk rock indie self-published travel type.
Well,
trying to open doors for myself as much as I can, I guess.
So are you going to do more traveling, or have you hung up your crops?
I'm hoping to go to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in September to promote my book.
Oh, okay.
So we'll see. I don't think I'm going to walk any of it. I herniated 2 discs in my lower back during COVID.
Oh.
So I've recovered. Like, I went through all kinds of stuff. I've been, you know, training, blah, blah, blah. But it still kind of bothers me. And I don't know. I think I need a rest.
Well, I mean, you know, you're doing all this writing and things. So, you know, you've got, that's another journey, you know, a different kind of journey, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, maybe we should finish there because we had some technical issues to begin with. I haven't been able to see how long we've been talking for, but I think it's been a good
45 minutes.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. So was there anything else you wanted to share at all before we sign off?
Yeah, I might just put that on there again.
Yay!
Relish in the tread.
So that's available on Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon and all the EPUB, ebook retailers, all that stuff. Yeah. It's been all those. My Instagram is Freddy, Freddi _ Woomba, Woomba. It's the main character of the book. And I'm just doing little excerpt readings along the way as I'm traveling across Canada. So giving little snippets of the contents inside the book. Other than that, it's all good.
Get yourself on lots of podcasts.
Yeah. One day at a time.
With better technology than what we had today for some reason. Well, so Steve Hunter, that's the name on Relish the Road, if you want to look it up on Amazon. Thank you
Relish
so much.
Relish in the Tread.
Oh, sorry, Relish in the Tread.
Yeah.
Sorry about
it's
that.
It's funny, though, because Relish the Road was actually my original website, and it was going to be the original name of the book. But the website went, the person who was managing that website for me, a friend of mine, he relinquished his, management stuff, and he let go of all of his sites that he was taking care of on his server.
Yeah.
And somebody stole, well, didn't steal, somebody got my
website.
Domain. Got the domain, and I couldn't get it back unless I paid a couple $1,000.
Yeah.
So Relish the Road went out the door, and...
So instead,
pretty funny that you said that. Relish in the tread, yeah.
Like in the relish in the tread.
Like relishing the treads of your shoe, right?
Yeah. Or your Crocs. Relish the path. You know that we will finish, but one of the things I remember the most with all the Caminos that I've done was hearing the gravel crunch underneath my feet.
Yeah, totally.
I walked alone as much as I could. You know, at nighttime I'd socialize, but during the day I really kept to myself. And that sound, it's just a beautiful sound to me. it's so peaceful. And
it stays with you.
It does. Definitely stays
with you. There's these like sounds wherever you go, like the chai, 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 chai. You know, like that. I will never forget that sound for as long as I live. Or the guys in Istanbul that walk around selling the bagels. Simit, simit.
I remember when I was in Manila at dusk every night, guys would come around yelling out, balut, balut. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
Yeah. I've been in the Philippines as well, yeah. Great place. And,
you know, every night, hearing that, it was, I don't know, it was really nice, you know?
Yeah, and it takes you back, right? You think about it, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of those sounds, but the gravel stones, yeah, really, it's totally part of it. And that's Meseta, right? Like the main.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The main gravel is the Meseta. And inside of my book, I also talk about this experience that I had where I'm walking on the Meseta, because it's two different stories inside of one. And so it's mm-hmm. like Camino in the background and then Rome to Istanbul in the foreground. Mm-hmm. And so there's a moment where the narrator is talking about this walk along the Meseta, and it's like 18 kilometers from civilization to Alberge, and there's nothing in between, and except for a combine and wheat and grass on the left side.
Yeah.
And sun, you know, like really hot. It was early July as well. And I went into some kind of other world, you know, like I disappeared for like 3 hours and I came out of it. And I'd lived through an experience that I went through when I was a little kid.
Oh.
It was really wild. And
a metaphysical like kind of walking, experience. Yeah.
Some kind of walking meditation.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah.
I came to and I was like, right when the hill's starting to go down, like the road is stopped and it's starting to go down and the albergue is like right down there. And I came to and I was like, holy crap, what the hell just happened? And so this actually kind of triggered me to also try and do a longer walk. So I could try and relive that sort of experience.
Yeah.
It never happened again, but.
Well, that's a clue to being in life, really not trying to recreate stuff that's already happened in the past, because it doesn't usually happen. So
appreciate it for what it was, right?
Yeah. So thank you, Steve, for coming onto the Buffalo podcast.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
And to my regular listeners or to my new ones, thank you for checking in today. You know, I appreciate it. It's one of the joys in my life is to honor people's stories, because everyone's story is unique and it's so wonderful telling your stories. It's great. And it's also listening to other people's stories. I find so fascinating. So thank you for that. And ciao for now. Thank you.
Ciao for now.
Ciao for now.